The following episode is brought to you by the American Urological Association.
Good afternoon. My name is Jay Rahman, and I'm professor of urology at Penn State Health and chair of the AUA's Office of Education. It's my pleasure to host another episode in our educational podcast series, with this being one of the episodes that focuses on some of the content that we're going to be highlighting at the AUA Annual Meeting 2024 in San Antonio. The specific topic for this podcast is surgical laser enucleation of the prostate, and it's my pleasure to host Dr. Amy Krambeck and Dr. Mark Asmus. Dr. Krambeck is professor of urology and chief of the Division of Endourology at the Northwestern University School of Medicine, and Dr. Asmus is a urologist and clinical lecturer for the University of Calgary, Alberta. So first of all, Mark, Amy, delighted to have you. A big thanks for taking some time to join me today and for the opportunity to pick both of your collective brains for a little bit.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe I'll start off, and a lot of these podcasts, as we angle up towards annual meeting, I think are trying to highlight some of our neat, unique content that we have there. And your course collectively has been really one of our popular hands-on courses over the last number of years. And it's interesting, I feel like as time has gone on, the buzz around enucleation of the prostate compared to 5 years ago and 10 years ago, where it was sort of a very niche area. Now I think through your efforts and certainly others has become so much more, I think, of a mainstream type topic, and certainly something that has a big appetite amongst urologists. But maybe before we talk about the course, just talk a little bit briefly, either of you, about, you know, the concept of enucleation, how you think about that in sort of the BPH, you know, realm and paradigm of treatment, and maybe just give me the 20,000 foot view on sort of BPH and where enucleation fits, and then maybe we'll go into greater detail about some of the nuances of the technique in the course.
Well, I'm going to let Mark answer first, just because we all know I can talk a lot. So I'm going to let him go first, and then I'll follow up. How's that?
Sounds great.
So we know that you know, there's many different ways to treat an enlarged prostate that's symptomatic for a male or BPH or benign prostate hyperplasia. Enucleation is a durable, long-term treatment that is safe, and we have many decades of evidence to support its use for the treatment of men with this symptomatic enlarged prostate. Essentially, what you're doing is taking the concept of a large orange with an orange peel filled with fruit that's obstructing the ability to pee, and we core out that inner fruit from the peel by finding the plane between the orange peel and the inner fruit. And so enucleation allows us to get to that sort of sweet spot, that space between the capsule of the prostate and the blocking fruit, and separate it and allow us to, in a good hemostatic and symptom outcome sort of perspective, remove that blocking tissue.
And just to follow up on what Mark said, that was a great description of enucleation. I think why you're seeing more and more buzz about it now is that when enucleation was introduced in the late 90s, it was kind of a scary surgery. So laser wasn't very good, bled a lot, Morse later didn't work very well, a lot of bleeding, required a really talented surgeon to get through the case. But over the decades, we've had improvement in laser technology, improvement in the Morse later, improvement in scopes, improvement in cameras. So you really have excellent visualization now. It's a very safe procedure, and more people can learn it, and it's open to the masses. It does take time, take dedication to learn, but with these excellent results, patients are demanding it. Hospitals want these outcomes, and so it's become this big boom in the last 10 years, I would say.
So yeah, I think you hit on a huge point. Sounds like technology has gotten a lot better, making it safer. And obviously that improvement in technology, I think, has helped with surgical experience. And I feel like that's one of the things that I hear a lot about this procedure, which is really is learning it, but then obviously time that it takes to develop the technical competence for it. Maybe I'll just ask you a broad sort of where does it fit question into the treatment paradigm. So, you know, obviously we all know about medical management of BPH and you know, oral medications. We have some of the missed therapies, and then, you know, we have enucleation, monopolar, less used, more bipolar TUR. Maybe just give me a sense a little bit of where does this fit into the treatment paradigm, and how do you sort of think about it? Is it gland size? Is it anatomy? Just give us, I know I'm oversimplifying here, but maybe give us some broad strokes on where this fits into the realm of treatment.
Mark, you want to answer first, or you want me to go? I will say you can use it in everyone for everything, but there's probably a little more finesse to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think if you look at most international urologic guidelines, there's strong evidence to support its use for any size prostate. So the small, the medium, certainly the large glands, and that's supported by most evidence long-term and recommended by the AUA. And so not only in the size-independent realm is it useful, but also in the unique situations where other treatments are not available. The anticoagulated patient, the more medically complicated patient, the patient who's failed other surgeries for the prostate. This surgery sort of allows us to treat your standard large prostate that's symptomatic, but also the unique challenging cases that other treatments are not available for.
When I talk to patients, usually one of the first as long as they, you know, aren't anticoagulated, don't have a catheter, and don't have a huge prostate, and they're just looking for symptom relief, I always ask, you know, how important is retrograde ejaculation? And if they say, I have to maintain antegrade ejaculation, then they should not have enucleation. They really should be looking at the missed therapies, understanding that these are potentially short-term fixes, and they may need another treatment down the road. But if they say, you know, I'm open to losing my ejaculation, it's not the most important thing here, then I go down the whole pathway. So that's, in my mind, that's where the division point is. The missed therapies are really, you know, they kind of live between medication and surgery, and they're meant for that person who doesn't want to go through a full surgery, who maybe doesn't want to take medication and is looking for potentially a temporary fix in maintaining their ejaculation.
And maybe my follow-up question to that is, To the point exactly that you may be dealing with slightly different patient populations, those that are really thinking about MIST, whether it's sort of their goals and specific aspects. But if we just look at HOLEP and we look at, say, TURP, which is, you know, the historical gold standard, maybe talk a little bit about, from both your perspectives as experts in the field, what are the advantages of HOLEP versus, let's just pick the TURP population, whether it be blood loss, catheter duration, so on and so forth. What are some of the benefits that we should be thinking about?
Well, I think, you know, there's been multiple randomized clinical controlled trials and even meta-analyses of these trials comparing TURP to HOLEP. And HOLEP outperforms TURP in every single category with regards to blood loss, catheterization time, hospitalization time, recovery time. And it used to be that TURP was faster than HOLEP. That was the only avenue where it did better than HOLEP. But with current era techniques and laser technology and morcellation, HOLEP is actually faster than TURP when you go gram for gram. Not to say that TURP is not an amazing surgery. I think it's a great surgery. You can teach it during a residency program to most residents, and it's widely applicable. But HOLEP is just a little better results across the board. Would you agree, Mark?
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, it's just a more durable, less chance of retreatment. And that's been shown in the literature compared to TURP, and it just has a more safe profile and more wide patient population that it can be used for. and from a resource utilization and a health, you know, cost perspective for hospitals and health systems, it's important to try to find durable long-term solutions for problems as opposed to numerous sort of kicking the can along. So I think that there's both patient interest, provider interest in better outcomes, and also system interest in it.
Sure. No, I think that's a very reasonable point. So last question before we get into the course, can you talk, Amy, you mentioned a little bit technology's gotten better, scopes are better. You mentioned lasers have gotten better. Just for our audience, you know, it's interesting. This course used to be labeled, the course that you teach at the, it used to be called a HOLEP course. And now it's obviously evolved to an enucleation course because there are different energy laser sources. Just maybe could either of you give our listeners a sense of holmium, thulium, or maybe there's other enucleation energy techniques. Just can you talk briefly about that the evolution of lasers, different types of lasers, or any other energy sources to accomplish enucleation?
Well, you know, in South America, there's a big movement towards enucleation. They have a term, enucleation is enucleation is enucleation, meaning it doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you enucleate, you're fine. And actually, before the first HOLEP was ever performed, there was an individual that was doing enucleation with a cold knife before laser technology was available. So the concept's been around a long time. It really started with holmium, and then we have individuals doing it with bipolar, green light, real thulium, and now thulium laser fibers, which is the TFL. So our course is really focusing on the two most popular, which are holmium or pulse modulation, depending on, you know, what brand you're using, and then TFL, because those are the two most widely available lasers. But you can really do enucleation with anything as long as you can cut and get hemostasis. So we thought it was really important, especially since TFL has really taken up in the United States and in Canada and other places across the globe, that we offer TFL because the technique is different. It's not the same as with holmium.
So let's talk about your course a little bit. And maybe I'm going to ask you the first question, which is for the enucleation course, who is this applicable for? Maybe we'll start with that. Like, who is our audience, and who do you think is a reasonable audience, and what should maybe be the goals that they have? And then we'll go through, you know, I think is the really unique aspects of the course and the details of the course. But what's the audience? Who should be looking at this? Who should be thinking about it? Who might benefit from it as they go, sort of go through their learning curve, whether that be, you know, a trainee or somebody in practice?
Yeah, I'll let Mark answer this.
Well, I think this is something that would be valuable to residents, fellows, or urologists in practice, specifically those who have a strong interest in BPH or enucleation, or are curious about new technology and just the surgical technique. It's an introduction for individuals that are new to enucleation. It can refresh those, or, you know, you can learn new techniques or see different types of surgical equipment than what you're used to at this course for those that are currently doing enucleation. It's not meant to be a certificate of approval, you know, to perform enucleation after this course as a newcomer. Further training and proctoring would be needed given the surgical challenges and techniques that take time to learn. But it's a great introduction for the interested individual and kind of get them excited about moving forward on their own sort of journey to be able to do this procedure.
Yeah, in the past, we've had individuals that are actually doing HOLEP come to the course because they're struggling with one or two little points, right? Or, you know, they want to see different laser technology or the different scopes and morcellators. And so they'll come just to kind of bounce ideas off the proctors and just kind of fine tune their technique. So we have had individuals like that as well. And I think they find it quite helpful too.
That's great. That's makes a lot of sense. So and maybe the related question to that, and obviously, Amy, you've been doing this for a long time and you have a lot of experience in it. But I think Mark's point's a really good one, which is I don't think any of us expect somebody who is totally new to enucleation to come in, do the course, and then be proficient to do it. I think that would be a very ambitious and probably unrealistic endpoint when you walk out of a four-hour course, whether it's this or, frankly, any of the other hands-on courses at the AUA. But it should be a foundation to build on, and obviously proctored environment, case repetition. But what would you broadly say from your experience is sort of that learning curve? If you go through a course like this and you're proctored, that you will start to gain enough proficiency that maybe the learning curve flattens out a little bit. Obviously, we're all learning continuously, but it flattens out a little bit and you become maybe a more of a proficient whole lap or enucleation surgeon. Maybe your perspective on that.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with the individual and their confidence level with lasers and endoscopes. So I've seen people after 10 to 20 cases be fairly proficient at whole up to the point that they're safe and can get through the case. And then I've seen other individuals that took, 50 to 100 to feel really comfortable. That's with how we train currently. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a much different training model. I know that Dr. Ahmed Ghazi is working on different ways to teach enucleation and different techniques. And there'll be, different, maybe not hands-on training on a patient, but hands-on training on these excellent models that can lower that learning curve to maybe 5 to 10 cases before you feel like you can get through a straightforward case. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about the next 5 to 10 years because I think we will see a huge improvement in the education of enucleation. But right now it's still in that, depends on the person, 20 to 50 range.
So tell us about the course a little bit. What's the structure? What will you be covering? Give us sort of some of the details on the course itself and how it's structured and sort of composed.
I would say that Mark has done the lion's share of just getting all of this organized, and it's really been his baby here. So every year we try to tweak it and make it better. But this year, Mark has changed the format just a little bit, and I think it is much, much better. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I think one of the things that the AUA is focusing on with the hands-on is getting people hands-on experience. So the feedback we've had from prior courses is, there's lots of good information. We love the talks from, these experts. We want that, but we also want the hands-on. And so we've shifted to, similar to other courses, more pre-work on the individuals that are involved in the course. There's some pre-recorded lectures from experts in the field that focus on the laser energies themselves, bipolar enucleation, green light, holmium, thulium, TFL, and then more talks about thulip itself versus holup itself. It's very beneficial for the participants to go through these lectures, do some pre-course quizzes to assess their sort of baseline knowledge, and then they come into the hands-on course, ready to really maximize their experience going through a holmium laser enucleation station, a thulium fiber laser enucleation station, and then a morcellation and ask the expert station. And as they go through these stations, we're sort of just maximizing how much time they get exposure to different technologies. So there's different types of holmium lasers, different types of thulium fiber lasers, different morcellators. And that's one of the unique things about this course that makes it special is pooling together all these resources into one course where they can actually see and kind of see and compare the differences between these equipment pieces.
So the participants themselves, they're manipulating the scopes, they're manipulating the lasers. Do you generally structure it that they'll do like half a lobe of resection and then their partner or whoever they're paired up with will do the other half of the lobe? Is that the general format of how you structure it with the hands-on component?
We try to focus on a number of key surgical steps. So at each station, ideally each participant is getting their experience with that laser, trying to enucleate a median lobe, learning how to do an apical turn, learning how to cut versus ablate tissue, and then how to actually deposit this enucleated tissue into the bladder. And so each participant should be accomplishing each of these skills personally, hands-on, at the different course stations.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of funny because every year, each station, we have these goals, and then you get into it and it totally morphs into something else. So through my experience, I find that there's some people that really are just focusing on cutting and enucleating like a median lobe. And then some people have had some prior experience, right, as a resident or whatever, and they blow through the median lobe, start doing turns and stuff. So we try to let them go for a period of time with the proctor in place to guide them through as much as they can do during that time period. And then a lot of people will watch their partner enucleate as well, and then use that time period to talk to the proctor. So the proctors have all been chosen because they have done several hundred, if not thousands, of HOLEPs, and they're a great resource for the participant to just bounce ideas off or to ask questions of. And they also learn by hearing the proctor guide the other participants. Mm-hmm. So the models are fantastic, that you can actually enucleate tissue with these models and really get a feel for the scope, the flow, the laser, everything that it takes to do enucleation with it. So I think it's good for the person actually enucleating as well as who they're teamed up with to get that time. We also have an Ask the Expert station that's part of Morcellation. So we have various morcellators available, but you know, that doesn't take an enormous amount of time to morcellate. So during that station as well, we'll have me and we'll talk about any question that you may have or just discuss difficult scenarios, getting started, that sort of thing. And I feel like that will eliminate. Some people in the past have like peeled away from their group to come and ask questions. And this way you don't have to do that. You have that dedicated time to just get your questions answered.
So Mark, you mentioned it a little bit, but you know, one of the things I've learned over the last few years, just in the educational realm, is that for courses, whether it's hands-on or instructional, but particularly for hands-on, folks, when they come, and obviously if they're paying money to do the course, they want to do the course. I mean, it needs to be hands-on, to your point. And I think we've learned, especially with how well we can manage a lot of digital education, that so much of the pre-reading, maybe the videos, maybe the didactics can be put, frankly, online. And you can look at it, read it at your own heart's content. And I would frankly hope, you know, you do that so that when you get there, boots on the ground, you're making the most out of the experience. But maybe talk a little bit about what sort of is encompassing some of the didactics that you put on there. Do you put anything like how to deal with hard cases or complications? I don't know, you get into bleeding, you get in the wrong plane. Is there stuff about what happens when things don't go right and how you deal with those situations? Or is that mostly what you do when you're all together in the actual synchronous session?
So I think the three main lectures that we have for the participants to look at prior to the course are more an introduction. Again, this is aimed at the people who are doing enucleation, who can come to the course and ask specific questions about complicated cases, but also the resident who's interested in pursuing a fellowship in endourology. And so our lectures are an introduction to thulium laser enucleation, holmium laser nucleation, and then the laser energies themselves. And then we use, like Dr. Krambeck said, there's 14 experts in enucleation at the course, and that's where you really can pick the complicated cases, the questions, what would you do here with the models there, with all these proctors. And so I think it's a good balance of some introduction in the coursework and then expert assistance in the hands-on section.
So, you know, our industry partners are great. Honestly, they we can't do some of these courses without industry partners, whether it's this course or many other courses. But maybe talk a little bit about, I think one of the great things about AUA courses is that they're sort of given in a industry agnostic manner. Although we count on our partners to help us with equipment and lasers and so on and so forth, at the end of the day, we are not tied into any product. Talk a little bit about that maybe, and maybe how that experience may be beneficial for attendees based upon, you know, their own hospital environment when they go back home, and what they may have access to.
Well, I do think that is one of the most amazing things about enucleation is it's never really been owned by one company, right? Which is mainly one of the reasons why it took so long to become popular. There's nobody pushing for it. So there's, you know, 101 ways to do this, where it comes from cameras to scopes to lasers to morcellators and so on. So this scope or this course is so unique in the fact that this is one of the few times you're going to get to experience all of it. So we tried to vary it up as diverse as we could. We have 24 French scopes. We have 26 French scopes. We have different companies providing those. We have different camera towers. We have different holmium lasers from different companies, thulium lasers from different companies. So it is very diverse, and you won't see that again. Usually, if you go to an enucleation course, it's going to be sponsored by a company, and you're going to get their select items that they want you to know about. So this is a great opportunity for, like I said, people that do enucleation just to see other options available.
So I guess, you know, one sort of final question to sort of ask you both about as you know, we finish up this podcast. When you have attendees, and Amy, you highlighted that it's not just people starting, but it may be people that have started and they're coming to refine their technique, get around areas that they're having challenge with. Do you believe that the majority are at hospitals where they're on the cusp of starting a program? And I guess my question is, you know, broad question is, if you do this course, but you don't have the technology access for 6 or 12 months or a year or so on, do you find that there's still enough that you can get out of it that even if there's a delay until you can start doing these cases, even in a proctored setting, there's value? Or should people be thinking about it as, hey, this is maybe an imminent thing that can occur. We already have the resources at my hospital, just as an opportunity to learn how to use it. How do you sort of philosophically think about that?
Well, yes, there's many different ways. So even if you do not have the resources at your hospital, this may be an ideal course for you because you can see what it is you like. You're not married to a technology. And then you can then, you know, obviously you can see what company it came from. And if you like it, then reach out to that company locally, right? So it's good if you have nothing available to you. You can take notes and understand what equipment is needed. If you have equipment available to you, but maybe you have an older version of it and you want to upgrade, or you know, you have a slower version and you want to change and get the benefits. So I think it can benefit someone either way. I don't think you have to be set to go forward with Holip tomorrow after this case, or after this, I keep saying case, I don't know why, after this course, I think I'm thinking about operating or something. But after this course, I mean, you don't have to be ready to go the next day. It can be the nice groundwork that you need before you even get any equipment whatsoever to decide what it is you want. And a lot of these companies work with rental companies that can bring in the equipment for a case. Mm-hmm. While you're in your learning curve before the hospital invests in all of the equipment needed to do a surgery. And that often happens for some people.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like I've seen that more and more, especially in tighter capital environments, that you have these sort of almost pay-per-click cases where you can sort of demonstrate an ROI, what your volume is, right. and maybe that helps sort of at a larger capital perspective at a hospital or health system setting justify worth purchasing or not purchasing or using the same model. Well, as I said, this is already very exciting. I saw the numbers, by the way, today, and the course is already tracking better than it did last year. And last year it tracked better than the year before that. So I think kudos to both of you. I think it's clearly an area that our membership is interested in. And I want to first thank you both for your time this afternoon. Really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having us. I'm very excited to see everyone in San Antonio and look forward to meeting the participants and seeing my colleagues as well.
Thanks.
For our audience, we thank you very much for your time. Please visit us at auanet.org/university. And obviously through the homepage, you can navigate to the AUA 2024 course registration and certainly take a look at a deeper dive on this course. I think it'll be one of the highlights of the annual meeting. Mark, Amy, I look forward to seeing you just in about 6 weeks or so. So safe travels to them.
See you then.
Bye.